Hello there and welcome to Paper Talk, the Irish Examiner Sports Podcast. Well, we've lots of talking points from the weekend with shocks and close calls across the Championship. We'll begin with Páirc Uirenn and Cork's close shave against Tipperary. Owen Cormacan was there for us on what was a very bizarre evening on Leaside.
Absolutely. First half was a truly woeful 35 minutes of football. I don't think you needed to be in Páirc Uirenn to realise that. I believe it was just as bad if you were sitting at home on the couch. Five scores, four to Tip and one to Cork. And Cork were truly rudderless in that first half. Nine wides, two missed goal chances, just could not make that final shot stick. And when Tip came out at the start of the second half and kicked 2 points, the first within 15 minutes of the second half, you were expecting Tipperary to push on and to record a second consecutive championship win. Credit to Cork that they did come back. A crucial moment was Ken O'Halloran's save, keeping out Liam Boland's shot early in the second half when Tip were three ahead. If Tip had got that, I couldn't have seen Cork finding a road back. But they did, so credit to them in that respect. I suppose we must give them some credit, seeing as they believe they're not getting much. But they're going to have to improve drastically, if they are to give Kerry a game on July 2nd.
What was the sense in the ground on in that first half, you know, from the Cork support?
That the pressure was getting on top of them, because there was massive pressure coming into this game. There was massive pressure on this group, on this management, to produce a performance, never mind a result. Now, I know people will say it's all about the result, but this team had to produce a performance because they hadn't done so since the league win up in Derry, when they were staring at relegation. And it just appeared that pressure was getting on top of them. There was good play at the back, but just when it came to getting the final shot off, no one was able to find the posts. And you know that there was a wide after wide building up. Paul Kerrigan kicked wides, Luke Connolly kicked wides, John O'Rourke kicked wides, and you could just see the frustration building and building. And then that was just pouring down from the stands, that the Cork support was just getting really annoyed. One individual stood up and said, bring on Larry Tompkins. It was just all getting on top of them. So it just did not look good at halftime. And that they turned it around, fair play to them. But if it was Kerry that had a 5-point advantage on Cork early in the second half, there would have been no coming back.
Okay, but in terms of the comeback, I suppose, credit where it's due. Some of the young lads that came on, Johnny Powter in particular, I was very impressed with him watching on television.
Absolutely. The subs had a major impact. That does, on the other hand, place question marks over the starting team, because we had three subs had been made by the start of the second half. Dunica O'Connor was the first in, coming on for Peter Kelleher. Barry O'Driscoll was brought in, and there was a third individual who escapes him. But and then Sean Powder and Michael Hurley both came in. Neither of them scored, but again, made telling impacts. It was young Powder that stripped the ball off Kieran Bergen as Tipperary went searching for their equaliser 5 minutes into second half stoppages. And when you look at Cork's 11 scores, four, that's over one third of them, came from players off the bench. So they had a telling impact. But again, does that mean the strongest team didn't go out? Luke Connolly wasn't on the match day 26 below in Dungarvan, yet started here and kicked 2 points. Stephen Cronin, on the other hand, started against Waterford, did okay in my opinion, but wasn't on the match day 26. So there's real inconsistencies there with regard to selection, and that's obviously something that will have to be ironed out ahead of July 2nd.
Okay, from a Tipperary perspective, I suppose we have to make mention of Michael Quinlivan's injury in the first half was a massive blow. Watching it on television, poor old Liam Kearns was on the sideline, literally pulling his hair out.
Absolutely, because it had been well documented that Tip had been ravaged by injuries coming into the game, and then to lose your chief target man 19 minutes in was a massive, massive blow, because even though it wasn't being reflected on the scoreboard, Quinlivan and Sweeney were getting good change off that Cork fullback line early on. He was a massive loss, and I suppose it leaves Tip with that nagging feeling. What if, you know, Michael had played the full 70 minutes, because certainly Connor on his own caused a lot of damage, you know. But I suppose the Evan Comerford, I should say, who didn't start, was suspended. The goalkeeper, Kieran Kenrick, was his replacement. And, you know, when Cork pushed up in the second period, Tip really, really struggled under their own kickouts. And that was key to Cork turning the tide midway through the second half.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, because sometimes it's difficult watching on television in terms of kickout strategies, etc. Was there any other option for him than to go along, had worked very successfully in the first half with the short kick outs, but I think that was more because Cork were sitting back. But could he have tried a Stephen Cluxton, you know, a quick one out to a 21-yard line?
The options didn't seem to be there. Look, as you rightly said, in the first half, Cork sat off Tip, you know, and as a result, Robbie Kiley and, you know, Brian Fox, more particularly, was the spare man on numerous occasions, was able to take the kick out just outside the 21 and work from deep. And as a result, we had Robbie Kiley, you know, marauding into the opposition half on numerous occasions. In the second half, Cork pushed up, you know, they put a man on Brian Fox so he could no longer be the receiver. Robbie Kiley also had someone stuck to him for the entire second half. The net result was that Tip had to go long. Now, whether this was something they had practiced or not, I don't know, but it didn't look. If it was rehearsed, it wasn't rehearsed well, because when the ball was being sent out to halfway, they were contesting, but they were not winning anything at all. There were a number of kickouts that went out over the sideline on the terrace side. So never mind not winning a breaking ball, but to see kickouts dribbling out over the sideline is never good for morale. But credit again there to Cork that they did push up. But absolutely, the Tip's lack of success on their own kickout in the second half was a major factor.
Finally, on in terms of the Cork game, what was the mood management-wise afterwards? Just relief, I presume?
Relief, yes. Yeah, they were, look, they were really, really happy, but they were also keen to get a couple of points across. Pather in particular, you know, wasn't happy, or, you know, isn't happy with the coverage his team has been receiving. Battered was one word he used. Bashed was another. This, of course, by the media and columnists and television pundits. You know, there was also a remark towards the smallest pitch in Parkirin, which was up in the corner. That was in reference to Colm O'Rourke and Colm Cooper, who were in situ for RTE, so they're obviously not happy with the media coverage. And then there was also the remark, which Pather was also keen to make, towards the county board, that these championship games that have been scheduled for next weekend, which they claim will involve 18 of their panelists and leave them with only three training sessions, three proper, you know, full-blooded training sessions ahead of the Munster final. As we speak, those games are on, but it remains to be seen if they will be changed. But I suppose, you know, we should add that there was hurling championship games 2 weeks ago, 2 weeks prior to the Munster semi-final, and the hurlers were afforded 2 weeks preparation, and the footballers will be given the same treatment. So it can't be argued that one code is getting preferential treatment. These club games, if they go ahead on Saturday, will still be played outside the 13-day window.
Okay, now Cork will be playing Kerry in that Munster final. You were in Cusick Park as well, Owen, and a sticky day for Eamon Fitzmaurice's men?
Absolutely. A bit like Tip, looking good early in the second half on Saturday evening. Clare looked very good early in the second half. Had the win behind them. Had numerical advantage, given Dunica Walsh had received his marching orders late in the first half and were a point ahead. And as I mentioned in the report in today's Examiner, Jamie Malone's shot, which came off the crossbar on 44 minutes at a time when Clare were one up. Had that gone in and had Clare pushed four ahead, because they did have the momentum and they had the crowd on their side, you know, it would have been really, really difficult for Kerry. Perhaps they would have got out of it, but they would have had to expend a huge amount of energy, more so than they probably thought, travelling up to Ennis. But the ball trickled out wide. Clare got nothing from it. Kerry kicked the next five scores and it was game over.
James O'Donoghue getting a lot of plaudits, I see, this morning.
Absolutely, and rightly so. Didn't have it all his own way early on, but I suppose that was stemming from the fact that he hadn't played inter-county fair since the league match against Roscommon on March 5th. The first three balls he went away from him, but he eventually settled into his stride and was one of two Kerry forwards to score from play in the first half. But in the second half, as Eamon Fitzmaurice rightly alluded to afterwards, he was the man showing leadership. He was the man leading the charge. Kicked 3 second-half points from play. 3 excellent points now, to be fair. And finished with 9 in total. So, you know, very, very good performance from James. And I suppose good to see that he's back fit and healthy.
Other positives from Eamon Fitzmaurice's perspective?
The championship debuts were handed to Kevin McCarthy, to Jack Barry, and Jack Savage also coming on. That was his first championship involvement. None set the world alight, but solid, and I suppose important that they got championship game time ahead of the Munster final on July 2nd. And also, of course, that Kieran Donaghy, we saw him for the first time in 2017, as did we see Johnny Buckley for the first time in 2017. And good to see Johnny Buckley, I suppose, because, look, there had been injury concerns surrounding Johnny from the All-Ireland Club Final win with Crokes, but that the two of them got game time, management will have been very, very pleased with that.
Okay, in terms of Cullum Collins and Clare, then we'll go into the qualifiers in a positive frame of mind?
Yes, but as Cullum said afterwards, massively frustrated and massively disappointed that they didn't take this opportunity and that they allowed Clare, you know, to push 7-8 points ahead with 5-6 minutes left, given they had been such a good position. But yes, yeah, look,
That finishing stretch there, Owen, was that as much to do with Kerry upping it a gear or, you know, the so-called weaker county of Clare losing their way?
Kerry absolutely did up it a gear, and the intensity Clare weren't able for, but they should have been better able to cope with it, given it was they who had the numerical advantage. Like, it wasn't 15-15, it was 14 Kerry players, you know, outrunning 15 Clare players. So that should not have been the case. So that's something for management to look at. But credit to Clare. Look, as David O'Brien said in the Examiner during the week, they weren't going out to contain Kerry. They were going out to play 15-15 because that's their style. They did that. And they stayed with them for 55 minutes or so. And look, there were a number of good performances. Gary Brennan was again excellent. David Tubridy off both feet, as people would have seen in the Sunday game last night. Absolutely class footballer. So there are positives there. And, you know, there's no doubt that, you know, if they wind up in the All-Ireland quarterfinals again after a good qualifier run, it won't come as a surprise to many because they're one of the teams in that pack, in the middle of the pack on the football ladder that are making real progress.
And thanks indeed to Owen for that. Next, we're going to return to the action in Páirc Uaireann and hear the thoughts of former Tipperary star Declan Brown on an opportunity lost for the Premier County.
Connor Sweeney got the goal. I was thinking to myself that, like, we were 2 points up, constantly to kick two scores, draw the match, and just to hold still a bit and get back to basics and don't leave them up the field. And we were barely sitting down in our seats and just buried above in the other net. So would we have deserved to win it? I don't think so. I think it was a case of maybe a draw was probably going to be the fair result because it was two teams that just didn't really want to have to go for it until the last 5 minutes. So it would be interesting to see what would have happened after a replay. But as regards ourselves, I suppose we have so much hopes and expectations now that we are disappointed that we lost it. But Cork, in fairness, they dug deep and they grounded out and they closed out the game then with the last 2 or 3 minutes by passing over and back to field. So we were never going to get another chance.
Okay, talk me through the emotion that you went through from the Tipperary goal to the Cork goal in the space of, what, about 45 seconds?
Yeah, I've tried an old teammate of mine, Tom Anklam, and we were hungry to her, actually. We thought that we were getting out of jail, you know, and I'd safely say we hadn't finished talking, we hadn't sat back down to see, and the Cork lads were up behind us, and they were doing the same, so it's a very, very hard lesson to learn. Like, you know, I was even just thinking coming home in the car after it. You could just see a Cork or a Dublin or a Kerry or a Donegal concede a goal like that after scoring a goal. You couldn't. So it's just going to be a difficult learning curve for us to take, but it's one they have to take on the chin.
But is that just naivety on the lads' part or innocence?
Yeah, the players were kind of like ourselves. There was ecstasy down the field. You know, they couldn't believe themselves that Conor actually got to the ball to tap into the net. So, number one, like, Ken O'Halloran shouldn't have been allowed to get out the ball so quick, and that kind of started it off. We were chasing it then, and Cork had the overlap the whole time up the field. So, and like I said in my article today, like, Owen Duffy from Monaghan, like, took a black card. I would have taken a red card, and I know I don't like to preach that kind of cynical play, but at the end of the day, we'd have been in the Munster final preparing for it, you know. So it's just, like I said, it's a hard pill to swallow, but the other side of it is, it's kind of like, did we deserve to win it? I don't think so. You know, so it's kind of double-edged sword.
You mentioned Ken O'Halloran's kick out there and his quick thinking. Did the kick out strategy catch Tipperary in the second half?
The Cork kick out?
The Tipperary kick outs in the second half.
I think, like, in fairness, I said, like, my own club mate here in Kendrick, like, he got a dream first half. Like, his Cork didn't put any pressure on his kick out. So, you know, everything went right for him, but I just think when we had to go along, obviously, Cork were there waiting for the scraps as well, so they got the breaks. But Quinlivan was a massive loss. You know, he can, and he did it last year when we were under pressure in the middle of the field. He came out and he won vital ball. So We were always under pressure. And I think once we couldn't get that foothold in around the middle of the field, Conor Sweeney was always going to struggle because there was no ball going in. But I think Cork knew that they were in trouble, and they knew they had to push up and they knew they had to go for it. So I think it worked out well for them.
Now, in terms of the criticism that Cork have endured over the last couple of weeks and possibly into the league, you could be talking months as well. You know, you've been there as a player, Dick, and as an amateur player, it must be very hard into these things, to read these things, and as well for their families as well.
Yeah, it's like I said, we've gone through the last couple of weeks up here in Chip, but we've all been lambasted as players down through the years for playing poorly and this and that. But when it becomes personal, it's a different kettle of fish. You know, no one has to endure that and full stop. Like, it's all about enjoyment as well. No one realised the amount of training and all that. So, for me, no intercounty player, no club player goes out to play bad, poorly on purpose. So the stick that Cork players have got over the last few months has been ridiculous. And I suppose it does feed into them. And you could see, obviously, in the Waterford match and in the first half last Saturday night, you could see that they kind of believe in themselves nearly. And it's wrong, Colin, but that's sport, and that's the way it has to be. But when it becomes personal, I think it's gone a bit over the top.
But just following on from that point there, Declan, when they kind of played without the shackles in the second half, they were, you know, it was like night and day, the difference between Cork in the first half and the second half.
Yeah, I was directly across from between the Cork half forward and Cork full forward in the first half. And, you know, I'd have done better myself. They just weren't moving. They didn't seem interested. But when they brought on that injection of pace from Pouter and Mark Collins and all that, it was a different story. Our half-back line was cleaning up in the first half. And I suppose they exerted so much energy, they were going to tire. And when they tired, it was a culmination of both tiring and the fresh legs from Cork that they really went at it. And like Paul Kerrigan, a lot has been written about Paul Kerrigan as well down through the years. Like, he, sometimes he does break the manager's heart because he'll do more bad things than good. But my God, he dug deep, and I think he brought Cork back into that game on his own on Saturday night. And I think it was a clever move out of, whether it was himself or was it Patrick Healy, they put him on Shane O'Connell in the second half, and he kicked 3 points off young Shane on his debut as well. So they kind of got that one right.
Okay, finally, Declan, in terms of Tipperary and the qualifiers, obviously a lot of concern over Michael Quinlivan's ankle injury. The fact that you've had so many other players unavailable for various different reasons, it's going to be very hard to match the fairy tale story of 2016?
It definitely is. It is. Like Liam Kearns was last year, he was on about the fellas we were missing. I kind of had enough of it, but it's just, it kept going on and on and on, and we were blaming this the whole time. And look how far we got. And it kind of started a small bit this year, but I do feel sorry for him because, you know, I think if Quinlivan stayed in the pitch Saturday night, we win the match. And I've no doubt about that because he gives you both inside and outside. But it's just, Liam Kearns is not getting a bit of luck. You know, Philip Austin, young Jack Kennedy was gone before the match the last day. And I know every inter-county team has those problems, but ourselves, if we could just get a bit of look on the injury front and have everyone available, I don't think too many teams will want to play as the qualifiers, Colin. You know, so, and we've had that experience of their own, you know, so it's going to be hard, there's no doubt about it, but listen, it'll be something we look forward to and with interest.
Wexford Park hosted a thrilling Leinster Senior Hurling Championship semi-final between Wexford and Kilkenny on Saturday evening. Davy Fitzgerald's men emerged victorious and have booked a place in a Leinster final. I wondered if our own John Fogarty had seen that result coming.
No, I didn't, Colm. I fancied that it was going to be quite tight, obviously because of the crowd, which surprisingly, you know, wasn't as big as most people expected. I think some commentators were saying it could have sold two times over. And sure, listen, we saw some of the queues for tickets last week, but no, it was below capacity. But still, they made a hell of a noise. And obviously, you know, the Davy factor, which has been spoken about before, but it's interesting now, the players seem to be playing that down a little bit, and they're talking about the whole backroom team. And there's a hell of a lot of guys there. Pádraic Fanning, Saoirse Bulfin, PJ Wright coming up against his own county as well. So, you know, it is very much a team effort as much as Fitzgerald was in the vicinity, as we all know, there at the weekend. But it was a great occasion. It was a long time coming from Wexford, they will argue. And yet, you know, it appeared that they were, to me anyway, it appeared that they were by far the better team. And yet, you know, they only won by 3 points in the end, which I think is a testament to this Kilkenny team, as much as we all know they aren't the Kilkenny of old, and they're carrying a couple of players. They're certainly passengers on this Kilkenny team, and yet they were able to come to, you know, as close as 3 points, if not, you know, even closer with the late scramble and Chris Bulger being denied by Mark Fanning there at the end. It was a bit too close for comfort, but it was always probably going to be that way for Wexford. You know, they were fighting history as much as they were fighting Kilkenny.
In relation to Wexford, and, you know, so much talk last year after Davey leaving Clare about the setup and the sweeper system and everything like that, is it fair to say that Davey has moved on a bit in terms of technical innovation with Wexford?
Sean Murphy was playing a sweeper, as he has been over the last while. There was a little bit of innovation there in the sense that Jack Guiney was brought in and Conor McDonald was able to roam out the field. And we see Lee Chin toggling between midfield and the half-forward line. Sometimes he was picked up by Killian Buckley and then he moved towards midfield, where he was picked up by Deegan at times as well. And there was a bit of difficulty there. But no, it's still the sweeper system. Now, obviously, there's three or four ways of playing it, as much as Murphy is the fulcrum there, or certainly the guy there. But what was most interesting to me at the weekend, Colin, was that Kilkenny emulated it. They felt that they had to mirror it. I know a lot of Kilkenny supporters would take umbrage at that, and maybe those more realistic might even see that Cody did this and will criticise him for it, but it looked like they were emulating it. It certainly felt like that they were emulating Wexford and the way that they were shaping up. Conor Fogarty was playing the sweeper. They might say an extra defender, I say sweeper. He was between the two lines. It's semantics, but at the same time, you know, for all the criticism coming out of Kilkenny, not from Brian Cody, but from former players about the sweeper system and how much they think it's negative and that they think it's limited. It was quite interesting to see that they joined Wexford in applying one there in Wexford Park on Saturday.
Lee Chin gaining a huge amount of plaudits. John, just talk us through his performance.
Yeah, it was really the second half when he came into his own, Cullen. Like, he was decent in the first half, made a couple of points from place balls and what have you, set up a couple of scores. But it was really what stood out for me was the tour de force from him, particularly after the second Kilkenny goal. Like, you know, all the initiative was with Kilkenny at that stage, and yet it was Lee Chin who stood up. He scored the next point, which was vital from the puck out. He made an unbelievable leap, as we saw in the highlights, to set up Matthew O'Hanlon, to set up the platform for it. He passed it on, and then it was on to Matthew O'Hanlon. And then he scored a 65 there as well. Like, he really was you know, O'Hanlon, obviously, he shares the joint captain. Davy Fitz likes the idea of joint captains. He did it last year with Clare as well. But Chin really looked like the skipper there on Saturday. And he really coming into his own. Like, I see Babs Keaton referring to him as a great athlete, but I think he's a fine hurler too. He's unorthodox. Absolutely, he's unorthodox. But that's probably one of his best trading attributes anyway, because the strength of the guy is phenomenal. You only have to see the size of his back. He barreled Walter Walsh, who was, 16, 17 stone, out of the way in the first half. Some people might say it was a little bit illegitimate, but a lot of things were going to be let go by a referee like Fergal Horgan. He likes to let the game flow. But Chin is... Chin, you can understand why Chin is so marketable at the moment. He is the new Sean O'Gough, helping in that way. And obviously Sean O'Gough had the All-Stars and what have you, but you know, Lee Chin is still a young fella, and he looks already to the manner born as a leader.
Finally, John, and just in terms of Kilkenny, looking like yourself at the highlights of the match, a whole host of very uncharacteristic wides, which I was very surprised by.
Yeah, very much so. Ger Aylward, I think, had four wides, and obviously people were pointed to his rustiness and, you know, the fact that, you know, a rule of thumb for me, Cullum, is to, you know, usually give a pat to, you know, to somebody who's picked up a cruciate injury, usually give them, or I certainly give them, a little bit of a pass for the following season, because it really takes a year to 18 months to really come back from it. And, you know, we saw with Cullum Cooper, the season that he was back, he wasn't really performing. We've seen it with the likes of Kieran Kilkenny in the past as well. You know, it took a while for him to get up and running. And Aylward, at least he was showing. Obviously, he was getting frustrated. He was on a yellow card. He had the four wides. You know, he is not a tempestuous type of guy, but certainly he's a fiery type of character. He didn't like some of the marking that was being applied to him. But he was guilty of wides. Pádraic Walsh was guilty of wides. They were playing, you know, it was obvious that they were playing into that breeze, and which was quite difficult at that stage. But it certainly wasn't Kilkenny like to be so erratic in their shooting. But again, I would question just how many these guys were seriously match fit. Like Jay Leward, obviously he had a couple of club games under his belt, but we hadn't seen anything of him in the league. Pádraic Walsh coming back from a fractured heel, was he right? Why was he playing in the position that he was playing? You know, he's not used to it. You know, Tommy Walsh obviously started his brother Tommy started his career, or Kilkenny career, in the forwards and moved back. But we've only known Pádraic Walsh as a wing back and as a full back in the league this year. But we certainly haven't seen him in such an advanced position. And I wonder if Kilkenny were playing to him at their strengths there in that regard. And Richie Hogan, you know, we had heard some talk about his back coming into the game, and he was in pain coming off the field there at the end. He wasn't the Richie Hogan that we've known over the last three or four seasons. So it just shows how Anthony Daly made the point in our newspaper today that, you know, the pool, the depth of the talent pool isn't as deep as it, or certainly isn't as large as it was in the past. And I think that's come to show or come to bear now.
Okay, it'll make for a very interesting and exciting qualifier draw next Monday morning. We'll be adding Cork and Waterford to the mix as well for that. Okay, now let's turn our attention on to the football action. You were out in Salt Hill then yesterday, John, for Mayo Galway. Again, I'm going to ask you the question. Did you see this one coming?
No, again. Gee, it's like you're trying to humiliate me, Colin, with the predictions. No, I didn't. I thought it was going to be very tight again, much like what happened in Wexford Park. But I fancy that Mayo's experience and plus their hunger from last year and losing as they did to Galway in Castlebar last year, that would stand to them. But obviously everything was affected. The Keith Higgins sending off in the first half, totally justified decision. Shouldn't be.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you on that, John. As far as you're concerned, absolutely no complaint.
Yeah, no complaint. He, I think he knew it himself as well. Higgins, like, I think the argument was made in the Sunday game that he isn't a dirty player, but you know what, he isn't, but he's going to be kicking himself, and he can only hope that the next day that Mayo win, so that, you know, like, Higgins is over the 30 mark, he's as fit as a fiddle, there's no doubt, and there's probably another year or two left in him. But you would imagine if Mayo were to lose in the qualifiers, just how much of an appetite he would have to come back again. You know, a lot of people are signalling the death knell already of this Mayo side, certainly with the likes of Alan Dillon, who wasn't on the matchday panel yesterday, but Colin Boyle, who wasn't started. Stephen Ratchford said that was a tactical decision. You have the likes of Keith Higgins, David Clark, and guys like that, and you're wondering just how much more football they have in them. Obviously, you know, there were positives in the sense that they were very competitive with Galway, and Galway were very jittery towards the end. And Mayo could easily have stolen it, but they haven't, and now they're in the qualifiers again, and it's a long road from the second round. You know, three games to win to get to a quarter final, and they are on the most difficult side of the qualifier draw this year, with the likes of Donegal and Tyrone to come into it too, and Meath and Kildare. So it just remains to be seen, you know, is this the end of this Mayo team? Now they will, just like Kilkenny, they will thrive on being written off and dismissed and ignored. And if some of the injuries clear up for Stephen Ratchford, like Conor O'Shea and the likes of Brendan Harrison and guys like that, then they will have certainly make a great fist of it in the qualifiers. But there's so many questions of them now, and a lot of questions of this management team too. that's one thing that I think Stephen Rochford has to acknowledge now. Like, he is a proven manager, certainly. The way that Mayo came back and got up off their knees last year was very impressive. But, you know, the two league campaigns have been quite mediocre, and now being knocked out of Connacht again, as much as Galway are on the rise, it's not acceptable in a county like Mayo, as much as they recognise just what the players have done over the last few years.
Aidan O'Shea, probably the most talked about Mayo footballer of 2017. How did he play when he came on?
Very impressive, as much as clearly he's struggling with a groin problem, but he gave them, you know, Seamus O'Shea took a hit in the first half from Paul Conroy, and John Dively mentioned it in his column. He was never the same game, the same player again, from there on in. And, you know, Aidan gave them a bit of a force in the middle. Obviously, he had that disallowed point, but he won a couple of kickouts. I remember him intercepting the ball as well. So he definitely gave them something, as much as he's not a 70-minute player at the moment, and it remains to be seen if he is going to be a 70-minute player for in the qualifiers or in the next qualifier anyway. Like, he definitely he's one guy who can hold his head up after this game, whereas there are a few guys there. You know, the full back line wasn't the best day. Patrick Dorkin was very impressive, but the likes of Andy Moran didn't have a great game. Dermot O'Connor was really wasn't allowed to get going, and Fergal Boland, still a young guy, still quite experienced, and on a day like this he was found a little bit wanting. But we're talking about Mayo here. The winners are Galway, and that's really who we should be talking about more, because they are on the up. Like, everything seems to be going right for them at the moment. As much as I still think they're playing a bit too conservatively for their own liking, but again, that seems to be Kevin Walsh's way. Going back to his time with Sligo, it always seemed to be a safety first approach, and even with the forwards that they have, you'd love to see them, you know, being let off the leash a bit, but clearly they are a little bit mindful that they do struggle with their full back line at times. And that how Conor Sweeney and Michael Quinlivan took them to the cleaners last year is still fresh in the mind there.
Just from going through your report and some of the quotes today, I got the impression, John, that Galway felt that last year's victory over Mayo in the Connacht Championship, that they didn't get the credit that they deserved for it, and that's been a bit of a chip on their shoulder for the last 12 months?
It seems to be the case. Like, obviously, we wouldn't have heard anything about it if they had lost, and that's the way. Everyone seems to be, I remember speaking to Kilkenny's Paul Murphy about it before, you know, everyone looks for an angle. And, you know, Damien Comer was mentioning that they felt that they weren't given enough credit for last year, and that coming into this game it was all about Mayo. And in fairness, it was all about Mayo. If you look back last week, there wasn't too much talk about Galway at all. You know, it was a case of, you know, Mayo on a revenge mission and to reassert their authority in the Connacht Championship. But Galway put them in their place, as much as they were really hanging on towards the end. Again, I still think that they have this forward line column that is quite explosive, and if it is given the opportunity to really go at teams, then, you know, Galway could, you know, in time could be the most explosive forward line in the country. But again, you know, you know Kevin Walsh was very mindful of protecting that full back line, and obviously they were using the spare man and had the overlap after Keith Higgins sending off, and that suited them down to a T. But there are going to be bigger challenges, and I'm not talking about a Connacht final, but, you know, Galway now have got the monkey off their back as regards Croke Park, so they will be, you know, they're guaranteed it to be in the last 12 now, and you would imagine they will win the Connacht final, and we're talking an All-Ireland quarter-final then. Are they a top four team? That is the serious question there at this moment in time. I would still have a few reservations about just not the personnel, but maybe a couple of guys in the full back line certainly have to improve. I felt that they were a little bit they were fortunate to get away with some of the fouling yesterday, but in the way they play, that's where I have most concerns there, Colm. I just think that they have to be a little bit more offensive.
And that's it from Paper Talk, the Irish Examiner Sports Podcast. We're back again next week. Plenty of talking points as always. Don't forget, you can keep in touch via SoundCloud, iTunes, and on the Irish Examiner website, www.irishexaminer.com/papertalk.